It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Big show for you. Renee Ritchie's here. Lori Gill, they're both getting ready for the Apple Quarterly Results Call. It's coming up. They'll have a preview. Andy Iannocco, Alex Lindsay as well. Lots to talk about, including rumors about new iPhones. And we celebrate the 10th anniversary of one of my favorite Apple products. It's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly. Mac Break Weekly comes to you from the Twit LastPass Studios. Securing every access point in your company doesn't have to be a challenge. LastPass unifies access and authentication to make securing your employees simple and secure. Check out LastPass.com/twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 698, recorded Tuesday, January 28th, 2020. Fisher-Price quality. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Masterclass. Online classes taught by the world's greatest minds. Get unlimited access to every Masterclass for one low price. Go to masterclass.com/MacBreak. And by Health IQ. Health IQ uses science and data to secure lower life insurance rates for healthy people like you. To see if you qualify, go to healthiq.com/MacBreak and take the Health IQ quiz. It could help you save up to 41% on your life insurance premiums compared to other providers. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Apple. Lori Gill is here, not for long. She's going to have to... Do you have to trans... Oh, you look like... This looks like Mr. Ed now. You look...
Oh, I like it.
Lori Gill, I feel like a horse is going to stick his head through the barn door and say, hello, Lori.
It's very rustic.
Lori Gill's the managing editor of iMart. No,
it's still too bright, though.
I don't think
that's me either. I think somebody else did the brightness levels.
Somebody turned the light up, man. They turned up the light up. We got a earning call at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern. Lori, are you the transcriptionist now? I know Micah used to.
I am
to
doing
do
the transcribing, yes.
I'm so
Micah
sorry.
Taught me how, so. Yep.
Yeah, type really fast. Can you keep up with them?
No, not at all. It takes me quite a while after they're done before I get all of the transcripts.
So there's a great Android app called Recorder that Google now does. It's available on the Pixel 4, and I think they just made it available on the Pixel 3, that transcribes really, really well. You can record it and transcribe after the fact or transcribe as you go. And the reason I thought of it is I just was listening to a book, and I thought, that's a great passage, and I rewound it and turned this on. Now I have the text that I can edit. Anyway, just a thought. You don't have to type it by hand, do you?
Oh, no, I use a program anyway.
Oh, okay.
I have a program that helps me get it all out.
Also here, and he'll probably have to go then too, is Renee Ritchie from iMore, managing editor there. What do you do? No, what's your title?
I just do Vector now, and I do whatever Lori tells me. Lori says, do this by Monday, and I do it.
Vector guy.
Yeah, I do it.
Look
I get it
how
done.
Beautiful this shot is. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
All thanks
Renee,
to Alex Lindsay.
Great.
Alex Lindsay.
He recommends stuff. I'll do what Alex says. I do what Lori says. I do what you say, what Andy says. It makes my life easy.
Alex is our video guru from the Pixel Core. And
hello.
He told us to get an ATEM Mini from Black
and
Magic.
And it's arrived.
Mine came, and apparently so did.
Yeah.
I have a feeling so did Renee's. But you only have one camera hooked up into it, so you can't play with the dissolves and the keys and all that stuff.
No, but I have a C stand, so I will have something above me and probably
a
B cam at some point too.
Nice. It really looks good. That's very sweet.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. And then there's Andy Iannocco.
Still doing video the artisanal bespoke way. using stuff that was basically meant for grandma talking to the kids across the stores from Tempe, Arizona.
Hey, you created the Crane Cam 2000. You're no slouch, my friend.
And I open sourced it, by the way.
Oh, so, even better.
There you go.
Even better.
I didn't tell anyone how to make it, but if they figure it out, they're not going to get sued. That's
what are we expecting, Lori, in the quarterly results? Apple, this is their Q1?
Yes, this is the first quarter 2020.
Which is calendar Q4.
Yes. Yes.
So this is the big
now
this
you're
is
confusing
the big
me.
Well, I
know
it
I
me
know,
Apple's
I know.
Confusing you. So their fiscal year begins in October. And but it's our calendar fourth quarter.
Yes.
So October, yeah, November, right. December. Yeah. And that, of course, is the big quarter for them, right? Because there's a new iPhone.
Yes. Yeah.
So are we expecting incredible numbers?
I think that we're going to see an uptick. I think that we're going to find out that this year Apple did better than last year. If you remember, Apple kind of preempted their predictions right before their earnings call to lower that. And that kind of like threw everybody off and freaked everybody out. And I think this year, it's not only is it going to, they're going to meet what their expectations were from the last earnings call, but I think they're going to exceed it a little bit. I think the iPhone, and I think wearables in particular with Apple Watch and with AirPods, that's going to help them kind of shoot up their overall, how much money they make for this quarter.
I'm going to get a call from my dad because Thanksgiving 2012, I think it was, I said, Steve's gone. Sell your Apple stock.
Oh.
And he now calls me every quarter.
And tells you how much?
Says, I didn't sell it. Yeah. And this, thank God, because this year they doubled. Yeah. They doubled in value.
Oh, he didn't sell it. He didn't.
He didn't listen to me. Thank God. But he does rub it in. Thank God. You should never listen to me for stock advice. So it's been a good year for Apple anyway, even with the headwinds from Asia and elsewhere. They've done all right. Yeah. In fact, people were thinking, Apple was thinking, the Wall Street Journal said Tim Cook slashed guidance a year ago because of sluggish iPhone sales. And instead of a slump, investors got one of the biggest one-year stock rallies in history. Now, I will point out that stock price isn't something we really should care about. That's not, has nothing to do with it.
But holy smokes, $750 billion
holy
added
smokes.
That's a thing.
Yeah, that's a thing. That's a lot of money. Apple stock, $318. It would be hard for Apple to announce anything this afternoon that would make the stock go up more, wouldn't it, Renee?
So I think at this point, it's like you said, what their results are have never been a good indicator of what their stock is. They had the most valuable product, the most income-rich product in the history of products, and the stock was continuously pummeled, and there was leaks every time right before earnings that the iPhone was doomed and it would crash again. And it's much more of a systematic, controlled mechanism, I think, where people – and famously, there have been people who've confessed to doing this. They'll plant rumors. They'll do all these things so that they come out ahead. Their shorts do well. Their longs do well. That's what happens. And I think what happened this time, and it's been covered a couple times, is that people felt that they didn't have enough of Apple, especially longer term investors. And
they
started
wanted
buying
to buy
and
more.
Buying.
Okay.
Yeah, they wanted to get deeper into Apple. And now we're getting the rumors about Wuhan virus affecting production. And no, but this year it's really going to be doomed. And you don't understand. This year the iPhones are going to be terrible. Like anything they can do to try to push the stock back down before earnings. But
you're saying that's short sellers. That's not Apple. That's not any reasonable analyst. That's somebody shorting it.
Yeah, it's market manipulators.
Yeah. So there is one thing that we should probably mention that has a lot to do with Apple's boosted stock price. Apple took all that cash it repatriated. And a lot of it went to stock buybacks. That increases the stock value too, does it not?
And the employee retention, which is huge for them because they don't, they're not a new company. They're not an IPO, about to go IPO. They're not a startup where you can get equity in it. So, and they're competing with a lot of companies like that have massive reserves or massive upsides. And so they've got to be able to provide employee units that those employees can then buy houses with at some point in the future.
Yeah. I mean, but it also helps stock price.
It does.
Because it reduces the number of shares in the public and then therefore increases the value of the price. So it's not really clear from this journal article, they're talking about AirPods help juice the sales and blah, blah, blah. And maybe there was just buyback.
The numbers haven't been bad either. I mean, they're still making a lot of money.
They sold a lot of AirPods.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's their fundamentals are still good from a business perspective. I mean, the stock is probably doing better than it normally would because they're doing buyback. And so it's kind of a combination of both.
Yeah.
But I think that they're definitely, they're hitting on all cylinders still.
Isn't that amazing?
From a financial perspective.
Yeah. And this is holiday quarter too.
Yeah, this is a big quarter. You mentioned this Wuhan, the coronavirus issue.
Yeah.
Apparently suppliers are, this is from Nikkei.com, suppliers are saying we got to warn you, this coronavirus could impact production.
I don't trust the coverage simply because Nikkei is one of the companies, along with Wall Street Journal, that always puts out those iPhone delayed or screens won't be ready. Or
it's
they can't, those are all patently false.
It's great link bait.
So maybe it will, but it'll have nothing to do with Nikkei's report on
Suppliers warned that the blistering pace of production could be complicated by the outbreak of the coronavirus in China's Hubei province, given that their main manufacturing centers are in nearby Henan and Guangdong provinces. And those both had 100 confirmed cases. Shanghai, 50 confirmed cases of coronavirus as of yesterday.
This same article, though, points out that just the flu, seasonal flu, it hospitalizes
140,000 to 810 hospitalizations every year. That's globally, 12,000 to 61,000 deaths worldwide. The flu is nasty.
And
coronavirus isn't yet as nasty, but has the possibility. So it's not unreasonable to say there's a possibility, but it's not at this point.
There's a lot going on that there's a lot of people that should be worried. We don't want that to spread, and I don't want to be dismissive of that. But I think when you start throwing in those kind of be afraid kind of sentiments, you're sort of misdirecting what's actually happening and kind of creating a little bit of fear mongering. Like this article alone, you know, could be the thing that like dumps some of the stock pricing of Apple down just because they said something like this, which might not be true at all because, you know, people get sick and they keep working and, you know, that's just what happens.
Stock was down yesterday 2.9%. And of course, Nikkei says due to virus-related fears, but it could also just be the market preparing for today's.
And it's also Lunar New Year, and all manufacturing shuts down for 10 days during Lunar New Year. Like, just shut everything shuts down.
It is the case that some employees who leave China may not be able to get back in China after the holiday.
It's chaotic.
Yeah.
I mean,
and also people who have left Shenzhen won't be able to get back to Shenzhen because a lot of transportation shut down.
Right. So, you know, it's not unreasonable to say that. What other headwinds might affect the announcements this afternoon? Is Tim Cook going to say, it's augmented reality? What is he?
He just did. He loves that so much.
He did just recently.
I think he'll bring it up again. I think he'll mention it again. You know, when they start asking the question, he'll start talking about being bullish on augmented reality, I think. Yeah.
What else will we be looking for? Cars?
No.
No.
No, I don't think he'll bring anything about.
Yeah. I think he's definitely going to want to talk about services. He's definitely going to want to talk about Apple TV Plus. He's definitely going to want to talk about the success at the SAG Awards and other award shows. This is the second year of Apple TV Plus in which he will be expected, I think, to point out here is how well this is affecting our business. Soon enough, they're going to have to be talking about people who are actually paying to subscribe to the service as opposed to people who got a free sub because they bought Apple hardware. So I'm curious to see how he decides to how quickly he goes from his engineering and operations hat to entertainment studio Hollywood mogul hat when he's talking about those kinds of results.
Yeah. I was looking over Neil Seibert and Horace Dedya's consolidated or estimates, because I always find that they're very rational and they tend to be very accurate, and they're both very similar for them, like the iPhone, Mac, iPad, all those probably constant, down a little bit. Wearables up 11 billion, up 55%, revenue to around 62 billion. So I don't think it'll be a surprising quarter by any stretch of the imagination.
It's too early to assume that the Mac Pro will have any impact, and even if
it's such a
small niche market.
I mentioned that's a Halo thing, basically as an indication of their commitment to the Mac platform. But I don't think they'll show any results. It's always the most interesting part of these talks is what does he choose to actually share numbers about? That if a product or if a service or if a segment is doing gangbusters, Apple never shies away from saying exactly how well it's doing and how well it exceeded expectations. If it's something that is still a growing thing and it hasn't really been impressive yet, it gets lumped in under other categories. So that's in itself is a way to find out what is underperforming, what is their hold them sort of bet, and what are they really, really bullish about? But we shouldn't gloss over augmented reality. I think it's fascinating that this is Tim's go-to answer whenever he wants to talk about something that Apple doesn't talk about, meaning Apple doesn't talk about future plans, but he is willing and open to talk about specifically augmented reality, whereas before we had seen things like the earnings call before AirPods, he would say, we are going to be unveiling some exciting new product categories, instead of saying, there's a lot of opportunity in consumer audio.
Yeah.
It's very
nebulous. Yeah.
Yeah. So he likes to talk about categories. It's like a screen to him. Every product has a screen. So talking about screens is not a big deal because it's a non-specific product.
Cybart says
you have AR everywhere.
This afternoon, watch for wearables. That's going to be the success story of this quarter. AirPods Pro are still 4 week back ordered.
Yeah.
I mean,
for $250 device.
Yeah. Unbelievable. He's predicting a 55% year-over-year growth in wearables, home accessories, and that's got to mostly be AirPod.
I don't know. The Apple Watch, after the latest Apple Watch was announced and they dropped the price of the third generation Apple Watch, I think that really opened up a huge door for people who didn't want to spend the amount of money that they were going to be spending on a brand new one, and gave them that entry level Apple Watch. And then there was some sales around the holiday season that dropped it even lower. So I think Apple Watch is actually probably a significant number in that increase.
Interesting. He does also predict a 20% increase in services, up to $13 billion. That sounds about right. It's been a very steady couple of billion every quarter for some time now. Earnings per share up 12%, which is interesting. Mac revenue and iPad revenue down 5% and 7%. This is all predictions, and iPhone revenue flat. It's interesting. He does say he's assuming a $2 billion impact from coronavirus.
Yeah. Feels all about the coronavirus.
He apparently cares a lot about coronavirus. I'm sure there'll be a warning from Apple about it, right? They'll say something about it.
It'll be a headwind. I don't know.
Upgraded to headwind.
Right now, it doesn't have a lot of effect. But if it gets out of control, it'll have a huge effect.
Well, that's the problem.
That's what you don't know.
Exactly.
Well, not only that, the whole country.
Right.
Yeah. Well, not only that, but if it means that every single client of manufacturers is going to be upping their orders, kind of wanting to build inventory and build stock against the time when they think that over the summer this is going to be much more difficult, and suddenly they have overcapacity problems, you could have a very serious problem without there being a larger health problem than we're looking at right now.
Do you think he will say anything besides, we're very happy with the success of Apple TV Plus and congratulate our stars on their Golden Globe and their SAG Awards? Or will he start saying, and we're going to spend $11 billion? Because right now, Apple's severely underspending Amazon and Netflix. I think Netflix, I thought the last number I saw was $17 billion for 2020.
I thought it was really interesting how in their trailers app on the Apple TV, they're just sewing in Apple TV trailers into it with all the other movies. I saw the Beastie Boys one. I saw the Beastie Boys one. I was like, oh, I want to see that.
And then I was like,
can't.
Find it incredibly frustrating. I added, what's the new game, the new Silicon Valley type show? It's a gaming thing.
It
comes out February 7th. I'm excited about it. I added it to my Apple TV, which was a mistake, because now it shows it as if it's something I can watch, and I keep hitting it, and it's a stupid trailer again.
I actually saw an ad for that on Hulu.
Yeah.
I was watching Always Sunny in Philadelphia, and an Apple TV exclusive TV show ad popped up.
So Apple's spending, and this is it very Apple-y, probably as much on marketing as they are in production at this point.
Well, I just thought it was interesting that they were just kind of sewing them in, and you just start watching trailers, and they just get seen as, and some of them were like,
that's
seen
the strategy
with
behind the Apple TV app, right?
Yeah.
You can't help it. Amazon did this for a long time.
Yeah.
It becomes a promotional vehicle for the company.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You're just seeing it mixed in with everything.
Because that's where they can play their strength right now, because Netflix and Hulu, they have the libraries. Disney Plus has the libraries. Apple does not have a substantial library. So their job right now is to create producing series akin to The Mandalorian, akin to Cheer, the sort of the Seinfeld-like shows that everybody is talking about, and that so that the people who do not subscribe are thinking, well, geez, everybody's talking about Baby Yoda now. I feel left out. I'm going to at least sign up for a trial to see what this is all about. Yeah,
by the way, Baby Yoda is the icon of the Disney Plus app.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, they're not holding back either, we should point out.
Well, and I think that...
I can't believe Picard doesn't have a baby Spock. That's ridiculous.
I mean, yeah. One thing that I ask people on Twitter over the last week was, you know, I feel like the more and more content's available, the less and less I'm watching it. Like, I'm just kind of like scanning through it and then not watching any of it.
I think it's tit driven. So there is this wash of content, and then you wait till your friends and others, and you see this in social or whatever, wherever those signals are, till you see the hit surface up.
Well, and one of the things, for instance,
Mythic Quest, which is the game show we were talking about.
Right.
If we start talking about that a lot, that's going to rise up, and then so that's how people get through that. It's the same thing with YouTube. There's an infinite amount of content on YouTube.
It is. I wonder, like, one of the things that other people have tried but I think would be more successful on these platforms, all of the platforms, not just Apple TV, is basically being able to set your start time for your show. So I want my show to start at 9 p.m. or at 8 p.m. on Sunday. And the reason for that is that you could watch it and tweet and text with your friends.
I would, but that's when Ed Sullivan's on. I can't.
No. You could, but like you tell all your friends.
You want to make it more like a old-fashioned network TV?
No. That users could say, I want to start at 7 p.m.
Let's all watch together at 7.
So then what happens is socially you have a whole bunch of people that say, let's all turn this on at 6 p.m. and watch it. Because then you can text each other on Messenger and you can talk about it and you can do whatever.
You must have a lot of free time in your life. I can't even.
I don't watch it. I don't watch anything. I'm making TikToks. You know, like I don't.
Let's all watch his TikToks at 9 p.m., folks.
No. I have to say,
Apple TV has been a little bit of a disappointment. There is not as much as we thought. Maybe the morning show would be a breakout hit. I don't think it is.
I feel like a lot of them have been really heavy. And so I look at him and I go,
Servant was disappointing.
I get to him and I just go, I don't know if I really want to commit to that.
Mankind's getting very soapy.
Yeah.
They're going to make a podcast out of Little America, which is an interesting feel-good play, right? It's all about immigration in America. It's almost a quasi-documentary.
Again,
it's
that was
the best reviews of any show so far.
Has it? Is that Little America? Yeah, it seems like that's... Yeah. Oprah, what happened to Oprah? Wasn't she going to be the...
She's doing book club.
I don't hear anybody.
She had a documentary coming out on survivors, and she had a split with a production company over the timing of it. So she was removed from that production, or she removed herself from that production.
I don't hear a lot of buzz for anything.
I'm waiting on Foundation. I'm very excited for that.
The Foundation trilogy, Isaac Asimov.
Yeah.
Apple's going to make that when? That's not till 2021.
I don't know. It was one of the first shows announced, but I don't know what the timeline is for it to come out.
They've announced a lot of acquisitions and partnerships. They've really started to ramp up the production, I think, right?
Yeah, this is a film festival season. I think Sundance was just recently, this is where all kinds of acquisitions and deals are made. This is where they're buying inventory.
It's not as bad as this guy John Costier says. It's time for Apple to kill Apple TV Plus. This is yesterday in Forbes.
Is that a Forbes?
Yeah, of course it's Forbes, paid content. It's DOA. The sooner Apple realizes it, the sooner the company stops wasting billions of dollars chasing failure. That's a glummer look than I would maybe assume. I have to say, though, it hasn't been a massive success either, right?
Well, but it doesn't have to be. Remember that they're sitting on how many hundreds of billions of dollars? They have the ability to grow a business.
Right.
And even when Apple was less successful, they had no problem saying that we're going to continue to build this thing called the Apple TV, the only times we talk about it is to reassure people that we're not canceling it. So this is absolutely insignificant.
What about
and the
something
watch,
you've talked about
people
a lot,
said the
Alex,
watch was a failure when it came out.
Apple is apparently in preliminary acquisition talks with MGM. What if they bought a studio?
I still think it should be Disney.
Disney already got sold. It's too late.
They bought, whatever.
It's too late. They're too big to swallow now, right? Aren't they?
Apple could swallow them. Apple's probably one of the few companies that could swallow them.
But what's the upside for Disney? Why would they agree to that?
Yeah. MGM clearly is hurting.
Things are going to get really competitive, and you know, the bigger you are, the you know, and the integration with the technology. There's a, you know, what Apple could do with their hardware at Disney parks. You know, the tie-ins would be profound. You know, so it would be, you know, like there's it's one of the few matches that would make that
Disney
would make
spent
sense.
$70 billion to buy Fox. Mm. I would say Alex Disney studio, is probably is right saying, at the yeah. edge of what Apple could afford. Right
it's not on the edge, but it's some, yeah. it's definitely, and it's the right one. It has all the content that Apple would want.
But they could have done it sooner for less than they did.
They should have.
So I don't know if they're really open.
I guess, that, you know, there were rumors that it was very close, and then before Steve passed.
I think it may be a mistake for Apple at this point to buy a studio, unless you want to buy a library, a content yeah, just library. Say, yeah.
I think that Disney's the only one that makes sense. The rest of them don't. I mean, because for Apple, from their type of content, having Star Wars and Marvel and Pixar,
right.
and
it's, you know, like it's the library.
It's the right library for Apple to go down the path with.
Yeah. Do you know how angry Android users would be, Alex?
What happened to my Disney Plus app?
Yeah.
Well, I'll be interested to hear. Clearly, there's a positive spin which Tim will use about the awards. Season and doing well in awards season.
It's how everyone began. They got an award.
Right.
You know, I mean, Netflix got like
yeah. Remember
award.
When it was a big deal that a streaming service got anything, and now right. Netflix is like has two or what is it two?
I think
movies?
They were nominated for like 23.
Yeah.
Some, you
in
know.
The best picture category yeah. alone. Yeah.
Does he get even yeah. at Ricky Gervais? Does he use this opportunity to strike back?
somebody told me, I think one of you, that Dickinson is actually the breakout hit. Of Apple TV.
Dickinson is really good. Yeah. It's millennial Shakespeare.
What I was surprised at is the breakout hit at Netflix is The Witcher. 75 million
love
views.
The Witcher. Yeah. Yeah. I think it's pretty bad, but if you were a Witcher fan or...
It's bad in the right ways, though,
it's,
Leo.
It's good bad. Yeah. Yeah, Henry Cavill is... Superman is very...
It's Xena with a budget.
It's a good crossover. You get the female audience, and yeah. the male audience will watch yeah. anything that has swords. And so it's a good... It's
My
good
wife match. Likes it, actually. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. All right. Well, so we'll watch. It's coming up. The Apple quarterly results. We'll talk about them next week. But of course, you can read all the analysis at iMore.com, and Lori Gill will be transcribing.
She's amazing.
Type.
Including because she has to suffer through the analyst to go, Steve, can you tell me if the next iPhone will have five cameras? And he's like, my name is Tim, and you know we don't talk about future products. And I'm hanging up now. And then the next person does the same thing.
It's my favorite part, actually, of the earnings call is the way the call-ins try to like position the way they ask the question to see if they can trick somebody into saying something as if
color,
that wouldn't
some color yeah. on this.
Yeah. Well, it's great.
Also, sometimes it really is like a game of 20 questions where it's not so much that they can't tell you anything, but there are rules to how they can tell you something. So you can't ask a question like, will you be opening up watch? Will I be able to create third party software unsigned for the Apple Watch? But you can say, what are your feelings about developer APIs and access to hardware? And then translate for that, Lori's right. This is always the most interesting, one of the most significant things that Apple does, because this is one of the rare opportunities where Apple does not have a lot of control over what happens. You can ask any question, and if they prevaricate in any way, there are legal repercussions to making a lie. Yeah. So anything that they say, even no matter how, not that you're expecting anything daring or outrageous to be said, but if they say something like, "Oh yeah, well we switched all of our autonomous car people into a transporter team," and then you have to say that's ridiculous, but they will get sued to oblivion if that were not true. What does this mean?
I did not. This is interesting. Somebody from the chat room passed this along. The Rotten Tomatoes ranking of Apple TV shows.
Yeah.
I believe Rotten Tomatoes, right?
Yeah.
Well, it's sort of user.
I've gone to so many movies that they said were good that were bad, and so many that they said were bad that were good. I'm
top
like,
12, Snoopy in Space, then Helpsters, Ghost Rider, Oprah's Book Club number 9, C number 8, 43%, a splat on Rotten Tomatoes. Morning Show number 7, 61%.
Oh, but they're getting what's his name? David Bautista next season, Leo, so that's going to shoot it right
all
up.
The hunks.
They're getting,
For All Mankind, number 6, 73%. Dickinson, number 5, 74%. Servant, Number four, 84%. I bet they didn't watch the last episode yet. Hala. Number three, critics' consensus. Very strong. 88%. The Elephant Queen. 90%. Huh. Yeah. Number two, and the number one show, as you were saying, Little America, 93%. Somebody in the chat room says, Apple's just making shows for the liberal filter bubble.
Okay.
You mean there's nothing about the Donald in here? We could do a little Celebrity Apprentice, make everybody happy.
I don't know if people are aware, but the word liberal is not like an insult everywhere else in the world. Like there's liberal parties and conservative parties.
Only in
almost
America.
Every other country is like an official name for a party. Yeah.
Only in America. What else? What else is hot and happening here? Let's take a break. There is a lot more story. Apple spent a record amount in Washington lobbying, but less than the other guys.
Yeah.
Apple's selfie camera falls to 10th place in the DxOMark charts.
They didn't pay for their consulting.
Apparently not. Chip orders up to cope with iPhone 11 demand, and then rumors about the SE2 coming this spring. We'll talk about all of that and a lot more. Renee Ritchie from iMore.com, Andy Anatko from Boston Public Radio, Lori Gill from iMore, Alex Lindsay on his own recognizance. A minister without portfolio at Alex Lindsay on the Twitter and the Pixel.
A Ronin, masterless samurai.
Oh, untamed, are you a Ronin?
You kind of are a Ronin. Alex Shen.
You are a Ronin, a mercenary that works for anybody who can afford the sword.
Our Hitokiri Batusai.
But they're storming a village. If they're storming the village, let me know.
You're the guy.
I'll show up.
I just put Seven Samurai and Throne of Blood on my Plex server. Mm. Great movies.
You can just watch Mandalorian. Yeah. They reused all those movies.
Not everything has to be Disney oriented. Get your entertainment from someplace other than Disney.
Last night I watched Ad Astra, the space opera with Brad Pitt. It was Apocalypse Now. Think about it. It's narrated the whole time. He's going through this trip to get to his father, who is Colonel Kurtz, because he's gone mad.
Oh, wow.
It's really Apocalypse Now. I'm watching this going, I know.
So I was complaining about this, Leo, and my mom looked at me and she said, you know how many times they've redone Shakespeare? And I had no answer.
Right. Well, the truth is Shakespeare's all just the Bible. So I had an English teacher in eighth grade who said, you read the Bible, all the stories are in there. Bible and Homer. If you get Homer in the Bible, you got them all. All the stories.
Grendel and the Odyssey, Leo. If you read Grendel and the Odyssey.
It's all Grendel, man. All Grendel all the time. Beowulf.
Sorry, Beowulf. Yeah, sorry. I'm with the bad guy.
Grendel was a book, which was great,
yeah.
Taken from the point of view of the bad guy, which I thought was a great idea. And then there was the Wicked Witch. You're wicked. Yeah, it's become a thing. I think, my fine friend, my listener, our watcher, our viewer, you like this kind of witty repartee, right? Sophisticated people talking about intelligent things. That's why you watch the show. That's why I think you'd be really interested in Masterclass. Imagine the greatest minds, the greatest directors, the greatest actors, cooks, chefs, writers, teaching you. How about, wouldn't you like to learn screenwriting from Aaron Sorkin, for crying out loud? He actually has two. Good writing habits, writing captivating dialogue in the West Wing writer's room. This is actually one class, 35 episodes long. Aaron Sorkin, a master class. Samuel L. Jackson, a master class in acting. My favorite is this Pulp Fiction workshop where he breaks down the first scene from Pulp Fiction and explains what's going on and has real actors doing it. It's amazing. Judd Apatow, How to Write Comedy. It goes on and on. Armin van Buuren on dance music.
They have David Mamet talking about stories and screenwriting and writing, and it's really good.
Thomas Keller, one of the great American chefs, the most decorated Michelin star chef in America. How'd they get him to do a cooking show?
He's really good.
Oh, man, he's amazing.
Yeah.
French Laundry. You want to learn chess? How about from a world champion, Garry Kasparov? How to make a joke with Steve Martin? Just this little one, how to tell a funnier story. Nerves, hecklers, and bombing.
His is one of the best.
He's so honest.
Many things that he says that you'll think about over and over and over again. And you don't think about it while you're watching it, and then you find it, you're rewinding it over and over
He's a really super smart guy. Mexican cooking from Gabriela Cámara. Neil deGrasse Tyson on scientific thinking.
And the production value on this.
Oh, they're beautiful.
I'm pretty picky about production value. It's outstanding.
You want to learn ballet?
Like they turned all the way up to
from Misty Copeland? Oh, sure you do. It got me up on my toes. This is really an amazing thing. Masterclass. It's an immersive learning experience accessible on your phone, on the web, on Apple TV. They've got a great app. Classes on every, you could just tell, on every topic, taught by the people who are the best in their fields. Individual video lessons, downloadable materials, shot professionally, gorgeously. The lessons are short, too. They're 10 to 15 minutes, although there are many of them. I think Steve's is 35 lessons. So you can watch in little bites as convenient. Yeah. And you also get downloadable lesson recaps, supplemental materials. The cooking classes, for instance, come with a downloadable guides that are like a high-end cookbook. I don't know why everybody doesn't subscribe to this, and it's really affordable.
Yeah, don't buy them individually.
No,
either.
Buy the whole thing. Like, you're going to want the whole thing.
I bought the 1 year subscription.
Yeah, the all access.
And that's what makes way more
sense. Oh, you
got to
do it.
People look at these individually and they're like, $59, but it's not nearly.
Want to learn negotiation? Presidential historian Doris Kearns Goodwin on the secrets of presidents, on Bob Iger, CEO of Disney, on how to run a company. The founder of Spanx. I love my Spanx. Anna Wintour, the EIC of Vogue on fashion. Jane Goodall on conservation. Howard Schultz of Starbucks on leadership. Paul Krugman on economics. Bob Woodward, investigative journalism. Carl Rove and David Axelrod. That would be a great, the two of them together, the architects of Obama and Bush's election victories. That sounds just like a fantastic masterclass in politics. 24 episodes. Look, you're going to want this. You're going to want every one of them. Right now, you can get a great deal, unlimited access to every masterclass, one low price, and there is a 30-day money-back guarantee, so there's absolutely no risk. If you didn't get it for the holidays as a gift, and by the way, it's a great gift, masterclass.com/MacBreak. Get that all access pass. It's very affordable. Masterclass.com. Look at that. Steph Curry on three-pointers. Annie Leibovitz. I mean, talk about inspiration. Ron Howard directing, making a movie. Masterclass.com/MacBreak. We're all big fans. I'm jealous. I wish I'd thought of it.
Yeah.
I don't
know. Some of the best entertainment I ever see is an expert at something just talking about right. that thing they're an right. expert at right. without trying to make people laugh, without they've just accumulated 30 years worth of understanding, and they're as excited to share that knowledge as anybody is to acquire it.
India is turning out to be the number one cell phone market in the world, and Apple has found some sort of master's class in success. It was the sales in India, according to iMore, were down 43% last year, up 6% this year. What did they do right? Was it having a less expensive phone, Renee?
According to Bloomberg, it was the 10R.
Yeah. Yeah, and the 11 is.
Oh, the 10R that nobody wanted. I remember that. Bloomberg, right. Every time they wrote about it, it was the beleaguered, unsuccessful 10R.
Is this a lesson, though, for Apple that maybe the price of the phone has gotten too high, that maybe they...
It really depends on the market. And what's happening is the market's maturing. We're not used to a place where the smartphone market is mature.
Right.
If you look at cars, nobody says, oh, you know, that car is too expensive, or why are there so many cars? It's just there's cars you like and there's cars you can afford. And you,
that's right.
Yeah, and that you like. And you do a little matrix, and the one that falls on that is the one you get. And phones increasingly have to become that. It's not like Apple's mistake a couple of years ago was making the iPhone $1,000. And that just really pisses people off. It's okay to have an iPhone. Like a premium iPhone is $1,000, but you always want the normal iPhone, the iPhone that everybody wants, to be somewhere around $500, $600. Then you can have an entry level iPhone like an SE or something else, and then you can have other premium
11?
Ones, a foldable one. $699.
Okay, $700.
Yeah.
The SE is also.
But it's the iPhone. That's the important part. It's not the iPhone
yes.
is not $1,000, and you get the iPhone
yes.
lesser than.
It's $700.
The iPhone is $700.
Yes.
Yeah.
The SE2, which is a lower cost one, is rumored that it will be out this spring, or at least by the end
iPhone 9.
Yeah, Why would they call it the 9?
Because it's below 10.
But we have 11. Doesn't that send a bad message? A13, this is the rumor, A13 chip, 4.7-inch display. People really like small, smaller
and
phones.
And it's also durable. Like, I'm waiting for this because I don't want to give my kids even my larger ones because I'm afraid they're going to break it. And so I have gotten to the point where I want to give my kids, we have to pick them up and drop them off. And I'm like, I got to give them a phone. But I'm waiting for this because I don't want any of the other phones to be something that's thrown in their backpack.
This is durable.
Well, you also want small, two markets, like
modern processor and
relatively inexpensive.
$399, according to the rumors.
Yeah.
The magic with the original SE is that it hit two markets really, really hard. It hit the market for people who wanted less expensive iPhones, but still new, like not an old iPhone. They wanted to have all the features, but just less expensive. And then people who just wanted to have a smaller iPhone, again, not a phone with older features, like having to buy like a 5. They wanted the latest features. They just wanted it to be smaller. And the confluence of those markets was magic. And this is the same thing. This has the internals of a very modern, modern iPhone.
That's smart. Have the A13 chip so that you can keep up with the software, the iOS updates.
Absolutely.
And people don't feel left behind.
But it's also got a home button because you can no longer get a modern home button iPhone, and some people still prefer the home button.
Does it have a headphone jack?
This is people who want the classic. Mm-hmm. No. I mean, we're not going that far back, Leo.
Don't be crazy. Okay. Yeah.
But it's a difficult time because we're definitely at the point where you've got the majority of people who just want a functional device. In the Android space, we've seen so much people having success, including Google, with phones that are $500 and below.
Right.
So it's an interesting problem for Apple to have, where there's so many advantages to having an Apple phone, particularly when you get to the low cost phones. You know that an Apple phone, whether you buy it new for $500 or $1,500, has the same amount of security, the same amount of trustworthiness as anything else. When you start getting into budget Android phones, you start wondering, okay, how much adware has been pre-packed onto this thing through apps that can't be deleted? But you have to try to convince people that this does not have 3D face unlocking. No, this does not have the best-in-class camera with all the skin toning and background blurring and all this other sort of stuff. But please spend an extra $125 for our entry-level phone instead of another competitor's mid-range phone. Well, so,
and I think it becomes an ecosystem thing. People who start with something tend to stay inside that ecosystem. And so Apple giving up that whole entry-level market, whether it's my kids or college students or folks that are can't afford to spend $1,000 on a phone. That's a whole ecosystem they're giving up for a long time potentially. And so it makes a lot of sense for them to have a more cost-effective solution.
Well, remember that for a lot of people who are, again, not so much brand aware, a phone is just the device that they run the Facebook app on, or they run their social media apps on. They run their messaging apps on. So it's not. There are a lot of people that are walk onto the dealer lot and they're willing to buy any four-door sedan that gets good gas mileage and they recognize there aren't any umlauts or anything in the brand name. They want something that's just functional and just simply works.
It almost doesn't seem that Apple has been able to hit the entry-level market, though. If you think about the low-cost phones that they've put out in the past, like the 5C and the SE, they've just kind of disappeared. But what has been successful is just dropping the price of one of the phones that's a year or two old. That seems to be something that Apple has done right. But having a phone that's specifically designed to come out of the gate as an entry-level phone, they haven't really succeeded at that yet.
Yeah, that's not their strength. They don't know how to do affordable and inexpensive. They also don't know how to cut corners and make something terrible, but they also don't know how to make a really, really good, like, $500 phone. But you're right. That's one of the things I really, really like about Apple in the past 3 or 4 years. Instead of committing to the, no, we need a lean and mean product catalog. We don't want to give lots of confusion to people by having so many different models of whatever that have subtle differences between them. It really is a very, very big deal to be able to buy a 2 or 3 year old phone for $1,000 phone from 3 years ago for $500 or $600 today, particularly when those phones are still really, really competitive with a brand new out of the box, very nice $500 phone you could buy today. It's the longevity of these devices that is the big, big payoff for Apple and the users.
January 27th, 2010, a day I'll never forget. The last Apple event I ever got to go to.
I think I was sitting in your seat for that one, and that's when you had the Skype. You were Skyping back to us.
Let's not bring that all up again. we were covering it live. We were down there. We even had lawn chairs out in front of Yerba Buena Center, and we were talking about the release of a very hotly anticipated Apple product, the iPad, 10 years old yesterday. And 350 million devices sold, but it's been down. Sales peaked in 2013. It's been down for 7 years now. Is the iPad a success? I love my iPad, but people aren't flocking to buy new ones. What's the metric? 350 million is a lot.
I think one of the things about it is actually the durability and the fact that I think a lot of developers never really, including Apple to some degree, never really took full advantage of whatever was being upgraded from one iPad to the next. I noticed that until recently, my kids were able to use iPad 2s for a long time and do everything they wanted to do with it. There was no feeling like it wasn't like an iPhone where you felt like all these new features are there and if I don't upgrade, I won't get them. It was kind of like, oh, this iPad works, you know, and my iPad 1, I think, ran for 5 or 6 years. And there was no driving. There weren't a lot of apps that were really driving me to feel like I needed to upgrade. Things that drove me to get new iPads for the kids was the Pencil, you know, and this, the Pro one was because I decided I was really going to use this more than my laptop.
Do you?
Oh, yeah. My laptop sits in my studio. I don't really.
Yeah,
take it out. I take it out if I have to go to like do work somewhere, I'll take it out. But otherwise, I'm pretty much on my iPad.
Yeah. We were still in the old brick cottage to the Yerba Buena Center. I think when we were doing this, January 27th.
Is this the one?
I don't know what this open is because I was there, so I don't know.
Well, this is the one you turned your laptop around. You got the
Shut up. Yeah, here we are in the lawn chairs in front of the.
Look at that.
Yeah.
Technology at its best. This is what it's all about.
That's Jennifer Jolly from Channel 11 interviewing me on Channel 11 while I'm interviewing her on Twitch. Very confusing. There we are, the lawn chairs out front. Colleen had built some sort of crazy gadget that was allowing
us
to
stream. Before we get on, and we have some great people coming up, including Jason Snell from Macworld Magazine, Ryan Block from GDGT, Tom Merritt is here from Buzz Out Loud. Everybody's here. This is a huge event. I do want to mention one more sponsor, a great sponsor.
Okay, we'll skip that. I don't know who they are, and they didn't pay for it, so I'm not going to give them the free ad. we won't show the part.
I mean, that's the first.
Wait a minute. Oh, wait a minute. Who's that guy? Who's that guy with the hat there?
Wow. But when you're
I sure dressed funny back then, didn't I?
Those people don't.
That's Ryan Block on the left. As I mentioned at the time, GDGT, which was his successor to Engadget, and Andy Anako there with the exactly. You look unchanged.
No, unchanged. I have a slightly different style of eyeglass frame.
So do I, for that matter. And it looks like I'm wearing corduroys, which I haven't worn since 2010. So, but those were fun. That was a fun event. Go ahead.
That was a great time because we knew that Steve Jobs was fading.
Yeah,
and
he was
very old looking
at the time. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's why when I attend these events, I know that I can always I know that there's a video of it that's going to be streaming or on the web somewhere. So I'm not necessarily focusing on what's on the stage. I try to see things that are not being covered by cameras. And what really, really affected me was watching Steve. Like whenever there'd be like a video, he would be off stage, but just enough on stage that he was watching the screen with his arms folded and this big old smile on his face. And back at a time where you would think that, no, he's probably going to be sitting down. Any chance that he gets is probably the reason why. I bet that was probably one of the reasons why his presentation was in a very, very nice looking, comfortable chair for like a modern living room set. But no, he was just so beaming from side to side, happy as a clam. And you could tell exactly how much faith he was putting in this device, that this was going to be he couldn't wait to see exactly how it played out.
Isn't that great? Yeah. And it was, I think, a very exciting event because the iPhone had been such a success by then, 3 years old, and we just couldn't wait to see what the next thing was going to be from Apple. Yeah. And we had a pretty good idea it was going to be something
special. Well, and the iPad came first, right? Before the iPhone, it's from a development perspective.
Right.
That's a weird thing. Yeah, it came out after 3 years later, but they had been working on it longer.
I think this is when we got it. I don't know what this
is. No, I think this is me. I had a pre-release, and this was...
Okay.
This was my one set of videos that has more than a million views.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, nice. So is this when it had just arrived?
I posted it on launch day. I had it for a couple of weeks before launch day.
Oh, you did?
And this was before the days of I'm going to make so much money off of YouTube on this. It was more like there are things that I need to shoot some things that will go with my copy. What's young Alex saying?
So Alex was hosting this.
Oh, no, that's right. Now
this
remember,
is what
right?
you were
right.
remembering.
Right, yeah.
And
yeah.
then I guess I was out in the field you and you the were field, there. Yeah.
It's so, you look so young. Everybody looks so young 10 years ago. It's adorable.
Except me, because I was already old.
Go ahead, Lori. Tell us that you were in junior high at the time. You didn't have a driver's license. And that's fine.
Nope.
But it really, I think regardless of how many they sold, it really changed the direction of what we thought of as kind of portable cheap computing, you know, or inexpensive computing. We were really going down cheap laptops, and this kind of shifted all the gears.
And I know that tablets existed before the iPad came out, but the iPad is what made tablets popular. And I think it really did change the way everybody, not everybody, but a lot of people compute. And when we're in our little tech bubble, we are like, oh, well, the iPad couldn't possibly be a replacement for a computer. But we kind of live in a special environment where we need our computers for a lot more than a lot of people do. Most people didn't need a home computer. Most people needed something that was more like an iPad or a tablet. And so, you know, Apple brought that to the table and said, you can still have computing in the home, but you don't have to have a full-blown computer to do it. And that replaced a computer for a lot of people. I know a lot of people who just have an iPad in their house because they don't need the extra that a computer brings. Well, it's not as expensive. It doesn't take as much space. It's a better in between.
Yeah, and I think that the what I noticed was that the only people that really couldn't use an iPad alone are people who are computer natives. You know, we grew up with computers. We worked on them every day, and we were kind of used to how that works. Kids, I noticed, just use iPad. My kids just use iPads. And then I also found that left the workforce before computers were their everyday bit, they just jumped right on iPads too. Mm-hmm. So it was only the people who we spent all the time with our mouse and all the time with our keyboards where we really felt like we couldn't get away from it.
There's an amazing thread from Steve Sinofsky. He was talking about Microsoft's internal reaction as they were watching. Oh. Steve Sinofsky, for anyone who's not familiar, was running Windows in Office at the time and was charged with Windows 7. And they had a whole tablet PC initiative. And they were just watching this presentation going, oh, Apple's going to announce a tablet. It's going to be a Mac-based tablet with a stylus. We know exactly what they're going to do. It's going to be running.
Because that's what Microsoft would have done.
And they were just watching going, no. Yeah. And they just every expectation had to be changed immediately.
Yeah, we forget that this didn't come from out of the blue. Just like with the iPhone, for a year everybody knew that probably by the end of the year, maybe in January, Apple is going to be introducing a tablet computer of some kind. The only surprises were exactly what form it was going to take. And I remember the biggest speculation was not so much about what it would do, but how much it would cost. And I remember just this gasp in the audience when they said $499.
Yeah.
Because the smart money
the
was $799.
Remember that? It was $999 and $499 fell down and destroyed it. It went clinkle, clinkle, clinkle everywhere all over the state.
also, watch the video and pay really close attention to how I don't want to say vague, but how amorphous Steve's and Apple's explanation of the iPad was. They wanted I feel as though they knew that they had something really, really different. And kind of like with the first generation iWatch, they knew that it was going to be the software environment that was going to define this device, but they didn't have the software and they didn't know what people were going to be using it for. So they kind of, they tried to avoid referring it to making, they wanted to avoid giving people the impression that this is going to be a really good color ebook reader, or this is going to be a really good movie player, or this is going to be a productivity device. They covered their bases everywhere, but they wanted to, they knew that if anybody really pressed them on any one of those points, particularly the people who wanted to insist that this was a competitor for notebooks, competitor for previous Windows tablets that ran the full version of Windows, they're saying, well, clearly can't be a computer if it doesn't have a USB port. It clearly can't be a computer if it doesn't have a keyboard or a mouse.
Adobe Flash.
Right. And so these are the sort of things they're trying to head off by trying to present sort of a digital Rorschach test to say, whatever it is you really wanted this tablet to be, this presentation has to convince you that this is the perfect thing for that thing.
So it's interesting. I put together a whole video on this, the secret origins of the iPad. I got to interview a bunch of people about the whole process of making it. And the interesting thing is the brief for the iPad was just, I want a glass surface that I can use to read email anywhere. I want to be able to pick this up, no keyboard, strip it down. I want to be able to sell it for like $500 and just go anywhere and read my email. And they added a few other things to that. Like Steve Jobs said, no one reads books anymore. And then he's like, Don, make me iBooks. I need iBooks by launch. And so they had to add a few features to it. But and Jobs called it the most important product of his life, but it was never meant to be a computer. And there have been these huge battles inside Apple. Like a lot of people say, like when Steve Jobs passed away, the iPad lost direction. But no, like you can clearly see that he had a direction for it that probably would not make many people happy right now. But they really did not want it to be complicated at all. It was supposed to be this thing that made computers even more addressable, comfortable, approachable by people who were still put off even by Macs. And that's what the initial iPad delivered, and especially the second one. And I just remember all my retired high school teachers were lining up on launch day. I went down the line and went, hey, Mr. This, hey, Mrs. And they were all there to buy a computer because it was finally a computer that didn't make them feel stupid.
I remember saying at the event, this is the computer Apple was created to build.
Yeah.
That this was what they couldn't do it in 1977, but this was what they always wanted to do. John Gruber, though, has a piece in which he essentially says he's disappointed with how the iPad has turned out. And I'm wondering what you guys think. He says the iPad at 10 is, to me, a grave disappointment, not because it's bad. It's not bad. It's great even, but because great, though it is in so many ways, overall has fallen so far short of the great potential it showed on day one. He's particularly unhappy with the multitasking, you know, the slide-in windows.
Yeah, he's not wrong.
To reach that potential, Apple needs to recognize they've made profound conceptual mistakes in the iPad user interface, mistakes that need to be scrapped and replaced, not polished and refined. I worry that iPad OS 13 suggests the opposite, that Apple is steering the iPad full speed down a blind alley. You agree, Renee?
So the thing is, this has been a problem inside Apple for years, and everyone inside an Apple says this, that the iPad could just be so much more, but literally nobody has got an answer to how to make it that yet. And they've got like the amazing marketing people, amazing engineers. There are world-class developers, and I think there's sort of two pressures. One is that dual mandate to keep it simple, but also, so the big danger was they never wanted to make it a Mac. They didn't want to visit the mistakes of the previous generation of computers onto the iPad, but there is a very small and very loud segment of people who would say, just give me a Finder, a mouse, and a keyboard and make the iPad my screen. And they really have fought against doing that for years, and they're doing it a bit now, which might be part of that mistake. The other problem is that we live in a time now where apps are a very different ecosystem. There were a bunch of people saying, you know, the App Store has never produced an Adobe. And to me, that's like saying YouTube has never produced a Disney. We went from a climate of incredible scarcity, which made all of applications incredibly valuable, and the people who control them or could make them incredibly wealthy, to a time when anybody can produce them. There's vast abundancy, and the return on investment in those apps is very different than it used to be. It's the same way the return on a YouTube video is not the return on a Star Wars movie. And the iPad, I feel, is really trapped in between those two things. Absolutely tear down the multi-window interface. I don't like it. I've complained about it in every review I've done since it was announced. there's ways to make it better.
It's not discoverable. It's confusing. Gruber says, it's my mother calls me all the time saying, how do I get this double pane with Safari and how do I get rid of it?
And it's full of collisions because there's just not that many gestures. And if you overload them, people make mistakes and they stop using it.
Yeah.
But to say that multitasking on the iPad is why the iPad is a failure or why it's a disappointment, that to me just, I respect Gruber, but I think that he wrote two different articles. He wrote one article about the 10-year-old iPad and then a different article, which is about how much he hates multitasking. I don't think they're one and the same. I don't think that you can put the two in the same category like that. That's one feature of an entire device. And this also goes back to what I was saying, which is that most people don't use multitasking windows. We're out there trying to multitask because we're trying to make our iPads more like a computer. But there are lots and lots of people out there who they don't want to use multitasking. They're not trying to use multitasking. They want to open an app, close an app, open a browser, close a browser, open their mail app, close their mail app. They don't want to do those extra things. So they're not concerned with that. So I agree with everything that he said, except for that, I don't think that you could say that multitasking is what made what makes the iPad a disappointment.
I think that the big problem is that we still have the same problems we had during that first demo. It's very hard to explain to somebody why you would want to, if you come into a store with $X to spend on something that is going to solve computer problems in your life, why would you buy an iPad instead of, if you leave the Apple store, inside the Apple store, the iPad is an amazing thing. Because for hundreds of dollars less than their cheapest MacBook, you get something that feels years beyond what a conventional notebook is. If you leave the Apple store and go to Best Buy with the same $500-$700, and you see that you can buy things that are familiar to you, that you know that your existing apps and your existing tools are going to work, that you're going to have a keyboard, that you're going to have a mouse. In many cases, you will even be able to fold it in on itself and still have a touchscreen and still have those sort of things. When you talk about delivering value for the $800, it's the iPad is great for people who recognize in the iPad the hole in their life that the iPad perfectly spackles in that no other device can fill in. But when you have someone who's just walking in with, I've got $X, here are things that I need to be able to do with a computer, I can do it with, I'm not prejudiced against one thing or another. I think a lot of people will be better served by a conventional $700 or $800 notebook than by another manufacturer than they will be with an iPad Pro. Now, I will say though that to ping back on something you said a little bit earlier, I do think that the $329 iPad is what the Macintosh was originally meant to be. I think it is Apple's Volks computer that anybody can afford, anybody can carry around. It's the most personal thing they have ever made. And so that's why I think that the biggest successes in Apple in the iPad line are the least expensive ones, the iPad mini and the entry-level iPads. Amazing devices that kick the butt of almost anything in its price range, so long as you're okay with not having a keyboard or toting around a Bluetooth keyboard.
And I also think that it definitely is what you're used to and trying to maintain that or let it go. You know, I look at my kids, my son has a Chromebook, I guess, that comes from school, and he does his schoolwork on it, but he doesn't do anything else on it. like he opens it up,
that's
he does
exactly
his schoolwork.
What the school wants, by the way.
Right. But he doesn't like the idea of that.
It doesn't attract
medium.
Him.
And he'll go over and he works on he builds stuff in Roblox on the iMac.
Right.
You know, so he'll go over and use that for that thing. Because it doesn't exist on the iPad.
Isn't that maybe how it's going to be in the future, though, is machines that I use this for this and this. You're on an iPad Pro in the chat room, but you wouldn't edit videos on it.
I'm actually playing with editing videos on it.
Is the operative word.
Well, I need a lot. I mean, again, this comes back to knowing what you're missing.
Right.
Whereas, I think that when you're used to it, like we had this problem a lot when Apple had Shake. It's a nodal compositor, for those of you who don't remember 15 years ago. There was this nodal compositor that we use in film, and Apple bought it. And this is before, they got a lot of money with iPods. And the interesting thing was, is if you had already used that, if I was teaching someone who had already used After Effects, they couldn't understand Shake. They were like, it took me 6 months to figure out, to think like that, because I didn't have any layers. You just had little noodles, and you're just putting things together, and you didn't understand how it worked. I could take an 8-year-old and teach them how to composite on Shake without any problem at all because they didn't know anything about layers. So as soon as I just told you how that worked, they were like, oh, this is makes. And then you take them to After Effects and they're like, I don't understand all these layers. Like, why do I have to do this?
Final Cut Pro is like that too.
Sorry?
Final Cut Pro.
Final Cut Pro is like that. People don't like
compared
leaving
to
Premiere.
IMovie just, or Premiere.
But right. If you start with iMovie, they're easy to move to Final Cut Pro.
Right. Well, once you're used to Final Cut, like I still go back to After Effects to do, like I did that little effect shot that I put up on Twitter. I did it in After Effects, but I came back to it.
To make it the ultimate computing device that you do. I mean, I don't know if we need one device to serve them all. I think, in fact, the way the world is moving, we have, you know, Amazon Echoes, we have televisions, we have iPads.
Don't say cars and trucks, Leo. Don't say cars and trucks.
It's not cars and trucks. That's oversimplistic. Computing is at the edge, and computing power exists everywhere. Our data is in the cloud, so that means you've got a phone, you've got an iPad, you've got a computer, you've got a TV, you've got an Echo.
I think where I see myself go back to my computer is, one, is complex operations that are hard to do with my fingers. You know, I just can't, you know, like mm-hmm. I need the mouse to do precision stuff. And that comes down to editing. You know, can only so much you can do with your finger when you're editing. And so.
Computing's cheap now, though. That's my point. And so you can have a watch.
Right.
And you don't have to make the watch the be all end all. You don't have to make the iPad the be all end all. Each has its own place and purpose in the ecosystem.
Yeah.
And because computing is cheap, data is shared in the cloud, you can have hundreds of devices. And I think we will eventually. That's clearly the trend.
But like, you know, like for me, it's video input. Like I can't have a video digitizer.
Yeah, but it doesn't have to.
What
I'm saying is, why are we trying to make this an all in one device when it does a few things perfectly and we'll just use it for that?
Between a phone and a laptop, Leo.
Well, and
right.
Then,
that's where Steve positioned.
But then in areas where I think it could do these things, like one of the big reason I go back to if I'm doing research is I don't know if cut and paste will work on an iPad. Like I don't know if I'm going to be in some zone.
I will sit down at my iMac Pro. There are times when I'll use my MacBook Pro.
Right.
There are times when I'll use iPad.
But what I would say is the one that I really go, this is stupid, is on my computer. Anything I can see, I can copy. On the iPad, depending on what the developer did, I can or I might or might not be able to copy what I'm looking at. And it is literally the number one reason I don't
but
do research
on my
iPad. Do you
think your kids have the same consideration, or is that just because you come from a background of ubiquitous?
Yeah, I don't know. They don't care.
They don't care. I think they say, this is what I use my Chromebook for.
Right.
This is what I use. I use my MacBook for Roblox. They're just tools to them. It'd be silly to say, I'm going to have a hammer in my toolbox, and that's all I'm going to use all the time.
Right. Yeah, see, it's also we're oddballs as our viewers and particular viewers
we're
know
old timers
that yeah. well no not old timers but it makes perfect sense for me to have three different like portable devices. I mean, no joke, I have on any given day, depending on what I need to do, I might take a full blown laptop, I might take a Chromebook, or I might take an iPad with me, and it doesn't seem insane to me that I've got what must be $4,000 worth of stuff that does exactly the same thing, pretty much. Most people, they have, if they're lucky, $1,000 to spend on a notebook. It might be closer to $500 or $600. And it's not even a case of them not having the money to have a secondary device. It just doesn't make any sense for them to have a secondary device. And so this is where I think that Apple has a certain case of myopia where it comes to the iPad. I really think that they have that emotionally they have a lot invested in the iPad, that if or in iOS, that if they were to create a really next generation operating system for the desktop, or a really next generation consumer grade Mac, even something as simple as let's have a notebook that has a touchscreen on it, I feel as though, not explicitly but subconsciously, they feel as though they feel like they've lost. If they don't say that this is the old style computer that we will continue to make because our customers love it, and Mac, we love Mac, and we want to continue to make Macs, but every time we have a really amazing idea for how to push the needle forward, we're going to put that idea into an iOS device. I really think that that is a limitation of their thinking. I can't prove it. This is just a subjective opinion, but I think that explains why it was so easy for the rest of the computer industry to not necessarily catch up with iPad, but say, wow, those are really great ideas in this iPad. Let's figure out ways of taking those ideas and making them really, really useful for our desktop offerings, for the more practical, again, the Toyota Corollas of the computing world, which is the most, they're the most popular cars, are the ones that just get the job done. And Apple is not putting that kind of faith and that kind of that kind of excitement into Macs. Again, I think it is a singular focus on iOS.
By the way, 13, what is it, 0.3.1 came out today. Anything we need to know about it, Renee?
I actually haven't looked at it yet. I was busy setting up this whole camera thing. Doing my job and
stuck it up on
looking
us.
I saw the update doc, and it really is just nothing but updates. I think the only thing that's really new is if you have a HomePod, there is an Indian English, I think, interface for it. But other than that, it's like fixed a problem where occasionally people would type an umlaut and a Unicode character that looks like an umlaut but is not actually an umlaut got typed instead.
I have to think there's something they're patching because they patched iOS, iPadOS, tvOS, Catalina, watchOS, and the HomePod all today. So there's something more than they're talking. You know, there's got to be something.
They made a little change to screen time for how you can allow children to call people and receive calls from people and chat with people on Facebook and stuff, which I know that was something that was discovered a month or two back, that kids were able to circumvent the screen time or the parental controls. And I think that's one of the things they just added to.
Maybe another indicator that it's got a security component, 12.4.5 for those of iOS users that are still on the old iOS 12 also got updated today. That, to me, is a strong indicator.
There's a bunch of them. There's
some security fix in the
an application may be able to execute arbitrary code with privileges in audio, a FaceTime issue with handling local users, self-view, image I.O., iOS accelerator, IPsec, kernel. This is all in Apple's security update.
If it had anything to do with the WhatsApp hack for Bezos.
Yeah, you wonder.
You know, because it's that was terrifying.
And that the was idea that
the amount of taxes 10. He pays, he should be
zero. Terrifying to think that someone can send you a video on WhatsApp and then start downloading everything from your phone.
Well, no, a nation state can.
Anybody. I mean, that's what we're trying to.
And by the way, that story is not. We don't know the whole story on that. There's still some evidence that even FTI Consulting, which came out with that report, said they have medium to high confidence.
Right.
That's not. But even if
that story is true, like that's $1 million+ $2 million exploit they were willing to burn on Jeff Bezos, which is interesting just politically.
Well, apparently, they didn't burn it because one of the problems FTI had is they couldn't find the malware payload at all. So they didn't have any way to analyze it, and they did not take the trouble to unlock to examine the bootloader for some reason. So I don't know. You know what? This is in the realm of gossip at this point. Not something you're exactly right.
There's a grassy knoll in front of his phone.
Not something we should be saying. Oh my God, I got to get rid of WhatsApp. At least not for that reason. There's other reasons.
It would have been something else. It would have been whatever is vulnerable at the time they needed
it. Exactly. Yeah. Neil Young says the MacBook Pro. is a piece of crap.
Neil Price.
Neil Patel did his best. He's interviewing Neil Young and Phil Baker about their new book, To Feel the Music, A Songwriter's Mission to Save High-Quality Audio. Neil Young, of course, has been pushing his Pono player, his high-res music player, which I bought, and he's very big on that.
Can you tell the difference, Leo? Because I'm not very good at audio at all.
No, I am good at audio, but I'm old. My ears are old. I think CD quality, there's a lot of evidence because of the Nyquist theorem that CD quality, or maybe 44.1 by 24 bit at best is all you're going to be able to hear.
Well, there are a lot of variables involved, let's just say that. And also the human ear can hear 20 hertz to 20,000 hertz, 20,000 hertz. And unless you're Superman, you're not going to do better than that. And if you're above 22, you're going to do far worse than that.
Well, that's the Nyquist theorem, which says if you have that frequency range, you can represent that perfectly without error in a certain number of bits.
And also keep in mind that the engineers know the engineers who are mastering this stuff, they know what a CD can do. They know what a streaming file can do. Yeah. And they're very, very good at making their threat music sound as good as it possibly
There's
can underneath those things.
A huge psychological component in what you think, how good you think the music is. And if you're told, oh, this sounds better, especially by a legend like Neil Young, you might well go, oh, yeah, it sounds better.
But there's also we're also talking about a guy who went out. You can pay for audio. Millions and millions of dollars.
Anyway, let me give you
that. But the only thing about Neil Young, you remember he went out into a rowboat in a pond and had his his house was one speaker and his barn was the other speaker. Yeah. I mean, the guy really is into his audio, so it's a different.
Don't think that's the ideal listening environment. I'm just saying, okay.
No, but I'd like to try it.
a lot of people who are like spending lots of money, I'm buying nothing but high res audio files, and then they plug in like the cheap plastic earbuds they got free with the phone.
Exactly.
It's like, maybe instead of $1,000 for new music and for a new deck, you've just spent $200 for headphones.
There is no limit to the amount of money we'll pay to feel like we have something super valuable and precious.
I just like a bit of jade I can stick up my hoo-ha.
Eardrums.
Another valuable Netflix acquisition. Thank God they got the Goop documentary.
No, but we like to feel like we're special, and this stuff makes us feel, you guys don't appreciate it, but I get the value from that million-dollar headphone.
I will say that my final conclusion after spending like a month and a half like buying and listening to high res music is that I do think it's worth it for certain select albums that are my favorite albums of all time, simply by virtue of the fact that when I buy an album, I'm buying it for 10 years from now, not just a month from now. And I would I don't mind spending an extra $5 or $10 if it means that maybe in 10 years from now, the standard mid-range or low-range audio thing that I'll be buying and using is capable of resolving stuff. I would much rather have the most data I can possibly have.
Yeah.
But you have to. It's if you want the most entertaining rabbit holes you can find on YouTube. Again, go to not just the high-end audio channels, but I'm talking about the Decepticon level audio where you'll see like these people who are also engineers, and they have totally redone the floor, ceiling, and walls of their house. They've got not just file cabinet speakers, that's just one of the elements of the speaker, and then they take you into the shop because what's your turntable, and they'll take you into the machinist shop they have in the basement, where they have like a turntable with, I'm not joking, a 60-pound platter to make sure that you get the inertial or whatever on it. And there's just like, I take a certain amount of pleasure in not only listening to my music, but also curating my music and like organizing it. There are some people who do get extra pleasure on understanding all of the engineering and mechanics of sound reproduction, and they're getting pleasure out of creating.
It makes you happy, that's fine.
Out of chasing the extra point.
But exactly, I got to point out one of my favorite albums, Miles Davis, Kind of Blue, beautifully recorded on analog tape. So you can buy, and I did foolishly, a 192 kilohertz 24-bit recording of that, but it's taken from an analog tape, which doesn't have anywhere near that kind of resolution. So
it's perfect replication.
It's a perfect replication of an analog tape is what it is, yeah.
Go back to vinyl. That's all I have to say about
that.
And
there's
hashtag
a lot,
vinyl.
There's a lot music, to be said, and she's a musician, so I believe you. So is Nia. There's a lot to be said for issues, and I've seen sound engineers say this, that higher resolutions, higher sample rates bring up issues, create artifacts that actually damage the quality of the
music. Same with computer screens. The HDR gives you more color space to hang yourself.
Yeah. Neil Young says, so Neil I doing his valiant best, says he's talking about people recording music in their bedroom on a MacBook. And Neil says, I'm looking at the new, or I'm sorry, Neil I says, I'm looking at the new 16-inch MacBook Pro. Apple gave me a review unit. They said, look at all the artists who use this thing with GarageBand to start. But Neil, you're saying that shouldn't be where the recording starts? It's a piece of crap. Are you kidding? That's Fisher-Price quality. That's like Captain Kangaroo, your new engineer, a MacBook Pro. What are you talking about? You can't get anything out of that thing. The only way, and on and on. The only way you can get it out is if you put it in, and if you put it in, you can't get it out because the DAC is no good on the MacBook Pro, so you have to use an external DAC and do a bunch of stuff to make up for the problems that the MacBook Pro has because they're not aimed at quality. They're aimed at consumerism. That's what Steve Jobs told me. Pre-2011, I guess. He told me the exact thing. We're making products for consumers, not quality. They don't want audio quality. They don't want to spend a lot of time on that. Audio quality, for your reference and for anyone else that's listening, is deeper than visual quality. On and on and on.
Well, so,
I don't disagree with him.
You absolutely have. You can't use app. I don't know what he's talking about. Like, you, of course, you're going to use a different converter,
DAC.
An external DAC.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That would be an obvious thing, and evidently, it's really hurt Billie Eilish. You know, to not.
Yeah,
to,
you know,
to
there's
do something
a really good example. How many Grammys did she win? She won on
all
Sunday.
All
she
them.
Won four,
I think all of them.
Four or five. She started on in her bed. She still records in her bedroom with her brother on and put it up on SoundCloud. That's a great story to me because it means some individual 16-year-old girl could get a massive hit, win five Grammy Awards for her first album, and do it in her bedroom on a MacBook.
That
is the real power of music, and whether it's perfect resolution or not.
Well, most of us have never spent any part of our life. I mean, I've definitely had the opportunity to listen to million-dollar speakers, and they do sound completely different. It's way better. I think that Atmos is actually more interesting than high resolution rate. But what most of us listen to all day is not going to get anywhere near that, and we're never going back. Like, we're not going to actually go back to those things. And I used to spend a lot of money on not $1 million, but I mean, I spent thousands of dollars on. On my audio.
I have some very nice planar magnetic headphones. They do sound a lot better, and they sound better with 24-bit sound if you can get it.
Right, but that's a whole environment. And then the whole environment
has to be there.
But I'll be
honest, HD Trex also sells a uncompressed version of Band on the Run, of Paul McCartney's Ram album, versus, and I'm talking about dynamic compression, versus the one that was distributed. And without the dynamic compression, it sounds phenomenal.
Yeah. Yeah.
But most of the records you're getting are highly compressed dynamically.
Well, and part of it is when you're listening to radio, it's compressed on the way out.
And then again,
you know,
audio is highly compressed. You should see how good we sound in 24-bit audio.
And for the benefit of people who aren't audio engineers, I barely understand what sound compression is, and I always default to, oh, you mean MP3, right?
Yeah, there's digital compression and there's dynamic compression, and we're talking dynamic compression here.
Bringing everything.
And then, digitally compression, lossy digital compression, and just craps it up even more.
Right.
So
the results are out, and Tim Cook is focusing on install base. 1.5 billion devices is what he wants us to take away from
this. That's exactly what the shift was about two or three quarters ago, right? We're going to talk about installed base and revenue per user instead of how many we sold. Okay, that means we're going to get out of here because you guys have work to do. But the call doesn't begin for another 20 minutes. Is that right?
Yep.
Okay. Fast. We're getting out of here fast. let's talk about our sponsor, then your picks of the week. How about that?
Yay.
And Lori's going to get her...
get my typing fingers ready.
Get her fingers all warmed up. What kind of keyboard do you use for this? Is this something special?
Nope, just my Magic Keyboard, which is special.
Special.
The Apple Magic Keyboard, too. It's special.
Special. Magic. Special. Our show today brought to you by the best life insurance agent for people like you, healthy people, people who pay attention to how much exercise, what you eat, how well you sleep. If you're doing everything right for your health today, you're ensuring a longer life. But does that life insurance company know you're paying more than you ought to? That's what Health IQ does. They basically think of them as a concierge service for fit, healthy, health lifestyle aware people. They use science and data to get lower life insurance rates for people like you. As an example, $1 million life insurance policy, $36 a month. The reason this is it's all based on statistics, right? Actuarial tables. But those tables are not very granular. They don't understand a lot of things. For instance, we look at Ant, who's, you know, buff. He lifts. His body mass index is through the roof, but it's all muscle. The life insurance company looks at his BMI and says, well, we're not going to give you a very good rate. But Ant's healthy. You need, if you're a runner, a cyclist, if you're into CrossFit, if you get 8 hours sleep every night, you eat right, maybe you're a vegetarian or a vegan, you should be rewarded for all that work with a more affordable life insurance policy from one of the top 30 insurance companies. They have rates just for you, but these rates are exclusive to Health IQ. You won't find them anywhere else. Health IQ gives you white glove service. They'll walk you through the entire process of applying. The policy is underwritten by one of the big 30. But because you are active, you have lower risks for heart disease, cancer, and diabetes, and Health IQ can explain that to the insurance company and can say, no, this person really deserves it. So here's how it starts with the Health IQ quiz. This is online. You can do this online. You'll give them your phone number. You'll take the quiz. It's not a self-assessment. It's a knowledge assessment. So it's the first step is do you understand how to be healthy? They put together a team of the nation's leading medical, health, and fitness experts have created this quiz. Depending on your score and other related qualifying factors that you might volunteer, for instance, they say if you want to give us your Fitbit data, that will help. You can, or your Apple Watch data, you could save up to 41% on your life insurance compared to other providers. Now, there's no commitment. You're going to learn about all the opportunities to be rewarded for your healthy lifestyle. It all starts at healthiq.com/MacBreak, HEALTHIQ.com/MacBreak. Take their special Health IQ quiz today, and then let their concierge service help you get the life insurance you deserve. HealthIQ.com/MacBreak. Once you take the quiz, their team will walk you through the process. And they're nice people. I've had a great call with my Health IQ concierge life insurance advisor. HealthIQ.com/MacBreak. Alex Lindsay is typing in the chat room. What are you talking about?
We were just talking about Billy. Someone was asking.
Billy Eilish uses an iMac with Logic?
Yeah. Logic's great, by the way.
Logic is an amazing program.
I've really gotten into it because I was teaching my daughter is really good at GarageBand, like frighteningly good. And she's learning how to play keyboard and everything
else. I think
else.
GarageBand, you could probably point to Billie Eilish and a many that say that whole generation, GarageBand, turned them on to making their own music instead of consuming it.
And by the way, if you're near an Apple store, what got my kids into it was taking GarageBand classes at the Apple store for free. And they suddenly understood how to arrange and they put all the stuff together. They're great classes. And so, anyway, so I wanted to move her to Logic because why not? You know, and so I started getting her to... You know, she started learning Logic, so I had really had to dig into Logic deeper because I'm kind of used to Pro Tools. And anyway, so it's really a great app, and it's super easy to use. And anyway, so she says
Logic. We can't work in studios. We're touring all the time.
Well, but I think originally they were just hanging out.
And it was in their bedroom. She even said that in her Grammy acceptance speech. These are songs I made in my bedroom.
Right.
Which I think is fantastic.
Well, if you listen to Big Head Todd and the Monsters... Do you ever heard of Big Head Todd?
Of course,
Monsters?
Yeah.
With if you listen to this,
I knew him when they were Small Head Todd and the Monsters.
But if you listen to the original one that he did in his bedroom, it's way better than the overproduced
honestly,
one he did in a studio.
A lot of times when I get those special editions like David Bowie and they put the demo of Space Oddity on there, him in his bedroom with a guitar, I think, because it has the spirit, the soul, right?
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of produced out of it as they made it a big production. It's so great. I have that, and it's an amazing recording. I think it was on the Changes box set, I think.
Yeah.
Anyway, what's your pick this week?
So I'm really into short video, like if you haven't noticed. I was talking
about TikTok. But what is your kid's TikTok again?
My kids are the
McDuffies.
McDuties. Wait, hold on. I'll find it again.
Your kids.
You're a terrible hype man, Alex. You're a terrible hype man.
The McDubbies.
YS, right?
Yeah, YS, yeah. And we have a lot of fun making them, but that's not my pick. My pick is the new kid on town in town is Byte. So Byte.
It's 6 seconds.
It's 6 seconds. It's basically made by one of the founders of Vine. So if you're into Vine, Byte, it's just getting started. So this is your opportunity if you want to be in and on the ground level. And the number one reason I mention this is for two reasons. One is this is the time to go get your URL. Like, you know,
I did immediately.
You know,
of course.
As soon as I saw Megan put it up, and I was like, and I'm going to go get. I'm going to go get my Byte and get my Alex Lindsay, you know, lined up and throw a video on.
I just feel like after we've had these longer TikTok videos, going back to 6 seconds, it seems so retro.
I'm trying. There you go. I'm playing with it. I did one so far.
They're over like that.
I know. Yeah, exactly.
That's it. Yeah.
They're fast.
Yeah.
So
but maybe that's a good thing in this today's fast-paced world.
I don't know. You know, like, so the thing is that I put up a loop that I thought was kind of fun. And, but it's more of a just to watch this space, whether it's TikTok or Byte or Looper or whatever ends up there. I think that this short, the super short space of less than a minute is going to continue. And it's not, There's a lot of silly stuff on it, but when you look at some of the educational things people are putting up on how to build things, or how,
your new McDubbies. Oh. This newest one is hysterical. It's called Missed It By That Much.
So
it's loading. Hold on. Loading. Why would this be so brave? Blocking video or something, because I could see it in the thumbnail.
How did you do that? A little green screen. I did a drone shot. That's a drone shot that I added shake to. And then I did a green screen of him.
So it's actually him falling. It's not like a dummy.
Well, it's green screen of him just on a. If you look at my Twitter,
he's not
feed,
even moving.
See, he's not moving. I'm just animating that. And then
that's hysterical.
And then I had to roto out her and the.
This is why I don't TikTok, because there's people like you.
Well, anyway, the kids wanted to do more effects than what they were doing, and
of course they did.
I have some skills there.
Why
so
wouldn't
I figured
they?
I would.
Daddy's a special effects guy.
Yeah. So anyway, it's but it's not done with like the phone app. You know, I just used After Effects and a bunch of Red Giant stuff and put it all together.
I wonder what Daddy's back end is on this.
This is my son's commentary on apple cider vinegar for people. And someone else.
Is that a cat off stage?
The funniest one though is the funniest one is let's see, wait, that the one with
I love how he does Alex's facial expressions.
This is
that one.
That's my favorite.
What you eating there?
I think we saw this last week.
Oh,
did we
show that one? Yeah.
Anyway, so McDubbies.
But what I was going to go back to with is Byte is just to pay attention to the space. I think that there is a value to the short space. I think that what this space is replacing is when we used to surf on channels looking for something to watch.
Yeah, but IGTV.
Yeah, but IGTV was in its own little space, and it wasn't. They were asking people who were already Instagrammers to go think about how another format. This gets back to the whole like using the format for what it is. I think that you had a bunch of Instagrammers that didn't know how to deal with video.
Right.
You know, and so this is.
It's Sorry? Too long, yeah.
It can be an hour long.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so I think that there's something about it, and there's something about the browsing method for these where you're just kind of, I don't like this. And
iOS and Android, I think. Byte.
Byte, yeah.
Byte.co.
Yeah. Anyway.
Andy Iannacco, your pick of the week.
Real quick one. There's one terminal command that I think that would help everybody if they knew how it worked. It's rsync, R-S-Y-N-C. It is just the standard Linux command for copying stuff from one place to another and potentially syncing them together to make sure that one thing contains the same elements as the other thing. Anytime that you need to find or copy something that has lots and lots of things with it, you should think about using rsync instead, because it'll work so much faster, so much more reliably, and so much easier to repeat it and skip it. I was reminded of this the other day because we were talking about music, and I'm sort of redoing my music library at this point to accommodate devices that I own and things that I do in 2020 as opposed to 2011, 2012, the first time I really did things. And so it's really important for me to take the like 190 gigabyte music library that I have on my Plex server and copy it, make sure that's regularly copied onto this flash drive and onto this micro SD card. And rsync makes that a really, really simple thing to do with just one command. So whenever I just bought, filling in gaps in my collection, just bought my first full copy of the Cars debut album after having only like three tracks of it in my library. I rip it and then I put it on the server and then do one command, and now it's on everything very, very easily. Whereas other solutions would require a lot of thought, and I don't have a lot of bandwidth for thought on a Tuesday morning. So learn how rsync works, because it will be the sort of thing where you'll wonder, wow, why was I doing that such a laborious way before? This is great. And if you know how to use Automator, if you know how to use other automation stuff, that means that suddenly a three line like Automator procedure or a three line Apple script can now automate and schedule something that just happens automagically for you. So it's one of the not everyone needs to know a lot about command line stuff, how Linux works, but this is one of the things where as much time as you put into it, you will make back 100 times in efficiency and simplicity.
Lori Gill, pick of the week. Wait a minute, do this already?
No. See, you're confusing here.
Because I ordered one
AirPods
last week.
Cases.
Yeah.
Last week was 12 Souths. And I want to bring this up because if you don't like the snap over case version, here's another one that I love a lot, the rugged case. from Nomad. It's a nice, beautiful leather, sleek looking case. I actually prefer the overflap snap that 12 South has, but this one, it's great because it's simple. It'll fit in your pocket. It doesn't take up any extra space. So it kind of meets all those standards of like the minimalist version. This is a silly little addition, but the hole where you can see the status light, they actually have this like really distinctive engineering technology that they've used where they put a little tiny glass pipe into that hole to allow the status light to just sort of be more present. So at any angle, it's really bright instead of it looking kind of dim or not noticeable. And I wrote a review about this, and that was kind of one of the things I was talking about was it's the little things. It's those little design things that you don't really take into consideration that when, you know, I'm just holding it in my hand, it doesn't seem like a big deal. But when someone points it out to you, you're like, oh, wow, that's really amazing that they did this one little thing, you know.
Nice 35 touch. Bucks. It's beautiful. Hornween leather. Nomad loves that Hornween leather. It is a beautiful, beautiful leather out of Chicago.
And they have it in black or brown. So if you, if your wife is complaining that you always order brown,
there's
like a black
the
version.
Brown. Yeah, she always get the brown. Well, I already ordered the 12 South. In fact, it should come today, I think. Renee Ritchie, pick of the week.
Sure. Just really, really quick. So Apple actually beat on iPhone 8% up. They ended up selling a large ton of
what?
iPhone 11s. Yeah. And they made much more money than people thought they'd make, too. So it was a good beat for Apple.
I bet that stock price is going to start 11, ticking up, man. Should have bought it when it was down yesterday.
So unless people start profit taking, but that's a whole other show. my pick of the week is an app that we actually all saw demonstrated at the iPhone 11 event when Phil Schiller had the Filmic Pro team up on stage. Now, this will be integrated into Filmic Pro, but for now they're putting it in a standalone app called Double Take, and it uses Apple's multicam API to let you record from up to two cameras. It works is a single camera with earlier iPhones because Apple says iOS, you can't discriminate between devices. But if you have a XS, a XR, or a XS Max, or if you have one of the 11s, you can use two cameras simultaneously up to 1080p, up to 30 frames per second. They push the bitrate over 30. It's got a really high bitrate for the video. You get to choose any two sides that you'd like to from it. So you can have, for example, I could put it between me and Lori, and we could see both of us, or me and a Pip, or side by side, and it's recording off the back camera and the front camera, or we could be at CES, and I'm getting a view of the entire table.
I'm so mad that they didn't come out with this before I went to CES, because this would have been so useful. It's free.
And they're going to... This is free. Some people were upset because they paid for
I paid filming, a lot for
the
Pro.
The Pro version of this will come to Filmic later in the spring.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Filmic. Anyway, it's kind of cool. It gives you all the cameras and you pick two. I was hoping they'd be able to pick more than two. And they're recorded. You can record it picture in picture, side by side, or standalone ISO'd. So you can have – I just recorded a video of me and Alex, and I have two videos as a result. One from the front camera, one from the back camera. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And Neil Young still isn't happy about it, though.
Neil Young still says it's a Fisher Price interface.
It's like an Exa sketch. It looks like an Exa sketch. That screen. But I've been using it for the last few days. I was in on the beta and I had a lot of fun with it. It works. Cool. It is limited 1080p, but it does really nice 1080p. You don't get the stabilization because they have to choose between the stabilization and the bitrate, and they went for bitrate because that's their reputation. But if you know what it is, if you put it on a tripod, if basically it gives you two cameras for the price of one. And we got to see a couple setups they had with like two, three, four iPhones all pulling double cameras. And that's when you guys started getting to like Steven Soderbergh sort of territory with these things.
Pretty amazing.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. I'm really pleased by it.
Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah,
but Alex can film Star Wars on it now.
Well, it's perfect for journalism. It would have been perfect for
Throw it on a tripod and just sit it between two people and chat away.
Yeah.
Thank you. That's Double Take. It's called from Filmic.
Yes,
and Filmic Pro, ladies and gentlemen. That concludes this edition. We're going to get them out of here because they've got some typing to do. Analyst call coming up next week. We will talk about the Apple results. Sounds like, though, they're already on track for a big quarter. Renee Ritchie, imore.com. We'll catch you on Vector at imore.com /Vector with your new beautiful setup and your ATEM Mini and your jib and your Sennheiser's shotgun mic. Pretty soon, I mean, he is making movies now.
Trying.
iMore.com. His boss, Lori Gill, managing editor, iMore.com from the Mr. Ed Studios in beautiful Burbank, California. Thank you, Lori. Good luck with the typing.
Thank you.
Yes. Thank you to, Pokemon Home to launch in February. What?
Not for Pokemon Go. Battle launched today, Leo. So you can go battle.
Okay.
There's a whole battle. These are live.
Chat room's giving me stories. I can't stop the show. Alex Lindsay. PixelCore. Alexlindsay on the Twitter. Thank you, Andy Anaka. When are you going to be on WGBH?
Friday at, 11:30, and it's going to be at the Boston Public Library Open Studio. So come in, have a coffee, and get a coffee and a cookie, and watch me make, again, descriptive hand gestures, even though I know I'm on the radio.
And by the way, I'm at the Vlog University with Justine this weekend.
Oh, where's that going to be?
Screen and TikTok. It's down in L.A. at Los Angeles Convention Center.
Nice.
And it's going to be there. It is like University. The who's who of trainers is all down there. So I think Justine's been working on this for like a year, and she definitely pulled in a lot of great people. So it should be a good couple days.
And I see Renee's Victor is up of the new filmic camera. So if you want to see it in action, Renee's got a great video. And boy, that lunch is fantastic. Did you make that?
Yeah, George and I slummed it at a sushi restaurant because our original location fell through.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, you're pretty fancy cook there, Renee.
So you can cut between them?
Yeah.
Oh. I'm telling you. They'd put this out 1 month earlier. I would have used it at CES.
Oh, man.
Well, they're just going to have to do CES again, and I'll have to go.
And with Filmic Pro, I think maybe we'll get Log. Fingers crossed.
Very nice. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes Mac Break Weekly in the nick of time, just in time to get out of here before the Apple earnings call. I thank you all for watching. We do this show every Tuesday right after iOS Today, so you can make your whole morning Apple-focused. Typically, we'll get to this show around 11:30 a.m. Pacific. That's 2:30 Eastern time, 1830 UTC if you want to stop by, or 1900 UTC. I don't know. I can't do the math. Stop by, watch it at twit.tv/live. That's a live audio and video stream. Or you can download it after the fact from twit.tv/MBW. Better, pro version, pro tip, subscribe in your favorite app. That way you'll get it automatically the minute it's available. Don't forget, we want the Mac Break Weekly listeners and viewers to participate in our yearly survey. Get your voice heard at twit.to/survey20. We're not collecting any personal information. I think this year we don't even ask for your email address. Just we'd like to know in aggregate a little bit more about you. It helps us do shows that fit your interests, but also helps us sell. I won't deny it. We don't track you, so this is the best way we have of finding out more about our audience. And, of course, completely voluntary. You could skip any question or skip the thing entirely, but it does help us. So if you've got some time, just 5-10 minutes, twit.to/survey20. Thank you, everybody. Time to get back to work, though, because break time is over. See ya.